Welcome back to the Stronger Thrive podcast. You are here with your host, running physiotherapist Lydia Mackay, one half of the show. If you are new, then welcome to the show. This is a weekly conversation about all things running where we chat to professionals and experts in their field, as well as recreational elite Olympian runners. And we also dive into some of our own interest areas as physios and as coaches, because I am indeed one half the show. We also have the wonderful Sophie Lane, who is a running coach, and she's not going to be here with me today. Instead, you've just got me hanging out with you, and we're going to have a good chat about tendons and tendon adaptations, and in particular how you can train and optimize your tendon training so that you are able to reduce your risk of injury and improve your performance. Because as a runner, improving our performance and reducing risk of injury is absolute gold. Like, that is what we want all the time, every day, forever and ever for the rest of our lives. So that is why it's a very important topic. Pretty much what we're going to cover. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you'll know that I've done a podcast episode about tendons before. And in particular, I spoke about tendinopathy, what it is and how you can treat it as a runner. Obviously, this isn't individualized advice, it's more general, but the principles apply for most people. And today is going to be talking a little bit more about just generally what tendons are and what the research says with how they actually adapt and the best way to train them to get the most out of your tendon training. Because if you're going to put the effort in to do some tendon training, you might as well go and do the real deal and like properly train them so you get the most out of it, because we don't want to be wasting our time. Time is precious. Time is our most valuable thing. So we don't want to be wasting it. Before we get into the chat about tendons, we're just going to have a bit of a housekeeping update chin wag about a few things that are happening at the minute, as well as just some of my own training updates. So first and foremost, if you're listening to this episode when it comes out, it is not too late to attend the free Ultra Trail Australia Q&A, which is going to be happening in Sydney. So this only applies to you if you're in Sydney, but Dave Stewart is organizing or has organized this awesome Q&A opportunity in Sydney's East. So could you dig us? If you guys check out our Instagram, Stronger Stride, at Stronger Stride, you can find all the information about that. But basically you just rock up, it's free. There's going to be an expert panel. There's going to be a dietitian, a coach, Sophie Lane and myself are going to be there. And we're just going to be having a good chat and talking about trail running. Even if you're not doing UTA, this could definitely be a great opportunity just to absorb some more information about trail running and different things that you need to consider, as well as potentially make some friends who are interested in trail running. Who knows, you might end up with a running buddy after the event. And also, just a great opportunity to come down to the beautiful Coogee, maybe go for a little dip in the ocean beforehand, and then get into the Q&A. So that is very exciting. Something else which is happening is Sydney Marathon in September. Now, obviously, September sounds like a long time away, but it's going to come quickly. But before then, there are the Sydney Marathon Run Clubs, which are happening in the city. They're starting at Barangaroo, and Nick Youngquest and Benny Lucas they're the Sydney Marathon ambassadors, and they're running these run clubs. And they're happening, I believe it's once a month, but if you follow the Sydney Marathon Instagram page, you'll see all the updates. But the one that is happening at the minute, or like the most recent one, is the 28th of April, so the day this episode comes out. So likely when you're listening to this app, you have probably missed the one today, and that's okay, but you'll be able to attend the next one. They're free to attend. Anyone can come if you're in Sydney. And it's really nice because they're all people that are training for the Sydney Marathon. So you might make some run buddies that you can then train for the marathon event in, but also just like a good opportunity to get out of your bubble a little bit. So I know for me, I would say I get out of my bubble a bit, but I definitely mostly just run around where I live in the East. So going over to Barangaroo and into the city is just nice. And on a Sunday, I've got that little bit more time. So it's nice to get out in the city. And I'm also just so excited to be running in groups again. And Nick and Ben are just absolute legends. And they're just such passionate runners who are really just so inclusive and warm and welcoming. So getting to be a part of their run club is just a really great opportunity just to hang out with them, if nothing else. So stay tuned, guys. Check out the Instagram handle for Sydney Marathon. The next thing that I wanted to mention is something that's coming up in just a couple weeks' time, and this is probably perfect timing for you to get involved, is Lockie Cameron is about to undertake this 1,000-kilometer run from Brisbane to Sydney. He's raising funds for Heart on My Sleeve, which is a mental health charity, and it's going to be approximately 95 to 100 Ks a day for 10 days, which is an absolute mammoth run. Even like the run itself is long, obviously, but even just the logistics around that, like eating enough food, having enough water, shoes, recovery, getting enough sleep, all those things, it's a huge, insane feat. So that's very exciting. And I'm also very excited because I'm going to be coming on the trip with Lockie and supporting him as his physio, which I just think is a really cool opportunity, and I'm just really excited to be a part of it and help him make it to Sydney. So if you guys are interested in following along, check out Lockie Cam Runs on Instagram, or check out the Heart on My Sleeve website, or you can also listen to the podcast interview that we did with Lockie a couple months back. So that is super exciting and fun and something that's coming up. And they're pretty much all like the things that are happening at the minute in Sydney. I wanted to tell you guys a little bit about where I'm at as well with my running. So as you know, I've had a long time off, and my last episode I spoke about getting back into running and building up my volume again, and like a bit of my strategy and plan around how much I'm going to be running and how much recovery I'm going to be having. And yeah, I guess I wanted to update you guys and let you know how it's going, because it's actually going pretty well. It's felt quite up and down still, especially those first couple weeks. I was very confident that I've made the right decision, but I wasn't sure how much my body would actually be able to handle, because it's just been such a long time off. And with my injury at the minute, I'm still not even able to do deadlifts, and I'm still not able to do regular squats or even a bodyweight lunge. Like my sort of nerve pain in this right leg, like it's still a bit up and down. I'm still having pain with it swimming and also sitting. And there was a period where it started to get worse, and I was like, oh shit, like I might have done too much running or too much of something. But then it's actually just like gotten better and better the more I've run. So I'm actually feeling really confident with my plan and really confident with what I'm doing. And I really feel like the more I'm moving, the better my body feels, which is pretty consistent with like not everything, but often nerve pain can be like that, where the more you're sort of static and not moving, like you get really tight, you get really stiff, and that can exacerbate nerve type pain patterns. And for me, I'm definitely more of like a stiff, tight person. Like if I don't move, I feel like I get like stiff and uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people are like that. And as my experience as a physio, there's a lot of people like that. But I find that patients tend to sit on either end of the spectrum. Like either you're someone who like, you know, responds super well, like you have a full week off and you just come back bouncing, you're just like so fresh and revamped. Whereas for me, I find that if I were to have a full week off training, which is what I'm implementing into my return to run, I need to be super active on that week off, like going for lots of walks, going for bike rides, which I've implemented. Obviously, I'm still swimming, I'm still at the gym, like I'm still doing stuff, but I definitely feel best when I'm active and moving, which is something I struggle a lot with my injuries, that I thought I was treating a joint condition, which joints usually like, I mean, it was such a weird one. I thought I had this thing called cuboid syndrome, and the treatment for that is like, don't move it, like immobilize the joint, get off your foot, don't walk around much. And so I was moving less and less and less to try and settle this thing down, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And I was like, I can't move any less. Like this is just not adding up. It's not making sense. Like I'm so inactive. Like I've never been this unfit in my life, which, you know, if that's what I have to do, sure, fine, I'll do it. But it just wasn't adding up. So I feel really stoked that I kind of have managed to like break through this like negative pain cycle where I was just like falling into this fire, and it was just getting like deeper and deeper, and it was like harder to get out of. And now I feel like I'm in this space where I'm able to move and manage my body a lot better. So I actually had a swim on the weekend, and I think it was the first swim that I've had no pain in my shin and foot. Like the first swim in like over a year, because I've had like pain on and off in my shin and foot when I've swam for this whole last like 14, 15 months. And so yeah, it was yesterday. It was a Thursday. It felt like the weekend because it was Anzac Day. I swam 6Ks, and I was so happy because I mean, also just happy because I really enjoy swimming, but I had no pain in my leg and I was like, fuck yes, go me, like go my leg. I'm so proud of you. Like this is the best thing ever. So I'm just like every little thing that happens like that, I just feel so excited by and just really like proud of my body because it's just like doing the thing. And I feel like my big takeaway from all of this injury is to trust myself a bit more and trust my judgment and trust how I feel in my body, which sounds a bit like hippie and woo-woo. And I'm definitely a strong believer in science. Like obviously I am a physiotherapist. I studied science at uni and I'm literally about to talk to you about the science on tendons. Like I've got all these research papers that I'm going to put in the show notes for you guys to have a look at, to read about how tendons adapt. And I believe in that. Yet I also think you're in your body all the time. And I think sometimes, and I think also for me, like having the science background and knowledge as a physio, and I treat runners all day, every day, I think I was almost scared to trust my own judgment because I wanted to treat myself and do this recovery like textbook perfect. I was like, I want to get the advice from everyone. I want to get the best advice and I want to do the best thing for my body. I want to like ask for help because in the past I haven't been good at asking for help when I've been injured. But I think if I had actually just like trusted myself a little bit more and just gone with what I felt was right. And honestly, I actually wish that I hadn't listened to so many people's opinions. I wish I just trusted what I thought I needed to do. But instead I listened to people saying like, put a boot on, like rest, like don't go to the gym, don't go for a walk, don't do this. And I wish I just trusted myself because I have had so many injuries and I've treated lots of injuries and I feel like I kind of knew that I think I kind of knew what I should have done right from the start, but I just wanted to do the right thing and I wanted to ask for help. So, you know, I don't regret anything. I just, it's just interesting. I think it's always a bit of a balance. Like, I think it's so important to ask for help. And I think that's something that probably a lot of people struggle with just generally in life. And I think it's something that I know I've struggled with a lot in my life. Like, I shared this meme on Instagram and it was like, it was like, the question was like, how much do you find it hard to ask for help? And the like caption was like, yeah, like a little bit or like occasionally. And then there's this picture of this person like moving a couch and they've got like a wheelie chair on one end of the couch and then they're holding the other side and they're like moving house. And I thought that was so funny. I was like, oh, it's so relatable. And I think so many people do this because you feel like guilty and bad to like get people to help you out. But I just, like, the older I've gotten and the more I've reflected on this, the more I realize that there is something so beautiful and wonderful about accepting help and giving help as well. Like, people like helping. People like that feel-good feeling of knowing you're doing good for somebody. So I'm almost changing it around in my head and I'm like, wow, like, letting someone help me is almost, like, quite generous in the sense that I'm allowing someone to have this like validation where they're like, oh yeah, like I'm in demand. My help is wanted. So I'm kind of like flipping that narrative a little bit and challenging myself on that. But back to like the injury thing. Sometimes as well, you have to just trust that you know what's up and you know what the thing is to do. Especially like if you're an electrician and someone who's not an electrician is trying to give you advice on how to change the light bulb, it's like, well, mate, I am an electrician. I'm going to bloody trust myself and I'm going to do this the way I know how to do it. And I think I could have done that a bit better with my own injury. But it's all a learning process and I'm very, very like happy and excited and kind of enjoying the journey. And it's had me reflect a lot on what it is about running that makes us feel so good, because a lot of that injury time, I was thinking a lot about, you know, I don't identify as a runner and I don't identify as loving running or someone who is an ultra runner or a marathon runner or a road runner. Like I think running is so powerful, but I would not normally say I love running. Yet I know that like it does bring a lot of joy to my life, but I'm very curious about what it is that makes it feel so good. And because I've had a lot of injuries over my life, and I think where it started is seeing my dad have this knee pain as a kid. And I remember we were going for a run, and I've mentioned this in the podcast before, so if you're a long time listener, you'll know this story. I remember my dad saying like, oh, like my knees, and I was like, oh, what's going on? And like, we'd been for a run, and I can't even remember the exact conversation, but I just remember he was in heaps of pain with his knees. And at that point in time, I was starting to get Osgood-Schlatter's, which is a growth-related condition of the knees, and it's something that you grow out of. And I remember my dad telling me about his knees, and I think he said something like, it's degenerative changes, or it's osteoarthritis, or it's not going to get better. Like, I can't remember exactly, but I remember like feeling so sad and like walking away from that conversation. And I don't think I was like crying, but I remember like holding back tears. And I just remember feeling partly guilty, knowing that my knees would get better, but then also just so sad. Like, my dad loved running and loves running, and he loves being active. He loves moving. He just enjoys challenging his body and getting the endorphins from exercise. And I was just so upset to think that he wasn't going to be able to do that at some point, and it was so limited. And yeah, I think, I don't know whether my sadness was like true empathy, or whether it was more out of guilt, or whether it was more out of fear for something like that happening to myself. Like, I'd love to say it was just pure empathy, but I was probably like 12, so I don't know what my capacity was to empathize at that age. But it's really interesting. Like, I think a lot about this, and I often hear people on Instagram talk about like always progressing and being better every single day, like moving forwards constantly and taking the next step. And often there's this motif of like, whatever you do, just make sure you're better than who you were yesterday. And I think a long time ago, I would have backed that. And now I really strongly disagree, because, well, not disagree, but I feel like it's not fair and it's not right. Because what happens when you're injured? You're not progressing. You're not moving forward. You can't be better than you were yesterday. And you could possibly argue that mentally you're becoming more resilient. And that's totally like, that's something that I think about a lot. And I'm going to come back to that. But in terms of in a physical way, you're not progressing, you're regressing. You are going backwards. And like with my injury, I couldn't run. And then not only could I not run, I couldn't walk. And then not only could I not walk, I couldn't go to the gym. Like, I couldn't squat, I couldn't deadlift. And I was like, everything is going backwards. Like, there is nothing that's moving forwards. And then I started getting pain diving. I was like, I can't even dive. And then swimming, okay, I can't even swim. And this is not to be like, oh, poor me, sad me, because, you know, like, this is just, I'm just explaining what's happened, and I'm just reflecting on this, and I'm hoping that this will be potentially useful for other people, because I mean, I just find it all so interesting. But everything felt like it was going backwards. I was also managing a vocal cord injury. So I was actually reducing my hours at work because I was in so much pain trying to talk. I couldn't record the podcast anymore. So I was losing that sense of community and connection with the podcast. I couldn't work. So I felt like my career was going backwards. I couldn't call friends. I couldn't call family. I couldn't socialize. And I was like, I just can't see anything moving well in my life. Like, I'm trying to think of what is going forwards, but there's nothing that's going forwards. Everything's going backwards. And then you hear these people talking about like, just be better than who you were yesterday. Like, show up like every day, get up, show up, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I just like, where is the space for going backwards? Like, in this sort of like Goggins culture. And I feel like I throw Goggins under the bus. I have a lot of admiration for what Goggins has done in the fitness industry, but that sort of mindset of like, stay hard and grit it out, where it's like, you know, every day you show up and you work to improve yourself. And there's a big part of like that being how I live my life. Like, there wasn't a day that I didn't get up at 4:30 in this whole period of injury. There wasn't a day that I didn't show up to the gym and do what I could do. Yet I was still moving backwards. Like, I still was feeling like everything was getting worse. And not only was I feeling that, that was because I was, like, things were getting worse. Like, my pain was getting worse. And I started getting pain overnight and pain just rolling over in bed. So it was just constantly getting worse. And I don't even know quite what the answer is, but I'm just becoming very aware that the sense of progression and moving forward is like a really important part of being a human. And I actually think that we can't abandon that and we can't deny that. And like this mentality of like show up every day, even though I've just said like, fuck, like I think that's shit. Like, why are we so harsh that we have to like keep moving forwards? But I actually think the reason why people are like slamming that message into our face is because it feels so damn good. Like when you see yourself move forward, you have this huge sense of accomplishment, like this sense of pride and this sense of I can do stuff. Like you feel empowered and it's such a good feeling. And it doesn't have to be running an ultra marathon. It could be anything. And I think this is where it gets tricky within sport and fitness, because you become like the more you do, the fitter you get, the stronger you get. And I feel like I've been in places now looking back where I'm like, oh my gosh, I was so fit. Like I did not realize how fit I was. And now looking back, I'm like, wow, like from having that experience of now what I would say retrospectively, I was damn fit. I'm like, heck, like if I'm comparing myself to myself, like I've fallen so far from that. And I would say that I'm probably the least fit I've been in my life right now, which I'm actually really okay with today. And one of the reasons I'm so okay with it right now is because I'm progressing again. I'm moving. I'm not moving backwards. I'm actually moving forwards. And all of a sudden, just by moving a tiny bit forwards has given me this huge sense of empowerment, this huge sense of like, I can do stuff and like I will be able to do stuff again. And like it's this feeling of hope and empowerment in like my physical body. And I think there's something that is just innate about that. And I think it's a really challenging thing within the world of fitness, because at what point do you start to plateau? Like if you are Eliud Kipchoge, he's the best in the world. He's only got one way to go. He's going to not be the best in the world. Like it doesn't get any better than that. So either he's going to like stay there for a couple more years, 5 years, 10 years, and then eventually he won't be the best anymore. Same as like anyone who's at the top. Like if you're at the very, very top, there's only one way to go. So like what happens as we age as well? Like at some point we're going to plateau. And I will say from a physio perspective and a research perspective, that age is far older and later than we think it is, especially if you're interested in running and especially endurance running. Like it is not 25. Guys, the peak is not 25. Like we have lots of time. But at some point, like it's going to take longer for you to recover. It's going to take longer for you to adapt. Like what happens then? Like where is our head going to be at? And like what are the tools that we need to develop or put in place so that when we see ourselves going backwards from a fitness perspective, we can find other avenues in our life to be moving forwards? Because I don't think we can deny our desire to progress. Like I think that is innate, and I think that's actually really important for our self-worth. And so with all of that, like something that I actually started doing, and it was actually really impactful for my mental health, is because I was identifying this. I was like, I really need to find somewhere to progress. Like, and so I started practicing my handstands, and that was good. Like I was like appreciating that. But what I ended up doing is I got Duolingo and I started practicing French. And this was really impactful for me, because every day my little Duolingo app would say like, keep learning to progress your streak or whatever it says. And I'm at, let me tell you, oh, actually, I haven't done it today. I think I'm at 59 days of Duolingo. Now, I'm not doing Duolingo because I need to be fluent in French. Like, I would love that. That would be really cool. But I'm doing Duolingo because I like being told every day, well done, you got your streak. You've done another day. You're on 58 days, then 59 days, then 60 days. Having that positive affirmation feels so good. And I tell you what, now that I'm starting to run again, I care way less about my Duolingo streak, but I'm still doing it because I think it's a really good practice. And it's something that I can do no matter what my body is doing, no matter how shit I'm feeling, I can still do 90 seconds of Duolingo. Because guys, that is all I'm doing. I'm not doing half an hour. I'm not going to become fluent anytime soon because I'm literally doing the bare minimum. But the point is, I'm getting a sense of progression just by doing this little five questions. It gives this little ding, ding, well done. And I'm like, heck yeah, I am so good. I'm moving forward. I've done another day. Like I'm moving forward in the world. And I think that is just enough for my brain to be like, well done. So where I'm at now with all of this is like, yes, yay, exciting. I'm starting to run again. Cool. But like, I'm not attaching myself to that emotionally. Like it is amazing. It's exciting, but I'm not attached to that. Like if I can't run tomorrow again for the rest of my life, whatever, cool, doesn't matter. If I can't swim tomorrow, like, gosh, that would be terrible. But, you know, like, I hope that doesn't happen. But I'm really aware and I really, like, I used to think a lot just about my identity, but now I'm like, no, it's got to be beyond my identity because I know that my identity is about moving and being in nature and connecting to myself. But that sense of progression needs to come from somewhere. And like, it's got to be like in relationships or in work or in French or in sport or in meditation or journaling or learning guitar. Like you've got to find somewhere in life. Maybe it's your veggie patch. And like, this is the thing, like, and I was writing this in my journal yesterday that I need to start and I want to start and I will start finding more things where I can get this sense of progression that don't rely on being happy. Like I could be depressed and still be doing this. I could be anxious and still be doing this. I could be injured and still be doing this. I might have my vocal cord injury flare up again. I'm hoping not because I've had surgery now, so that's better. But you know, anything could happen and we don't know, like tomorrow is not promised to anyone. What we have in our current day is not promised and everyone is aging. So like it's only gonna get worse from a physical capacity perspective. That sounds really harsh. Like you're going to get stronger and I'm going to tell you how to get stronger in particular, I'm going to tell you how to get stronger tendons in just a minute. But the point being like, we've got to be more resilient in our minds to handle the fact that like, you know, you might have an infection in your arm and have to have your arm amputated. And then what? Are you going to fall apart and be sad because you can't lift heavy weights and do bicep curls? Bloody hell, like, come on, you can't rely on bicep curls. Like, you can't be attached to your biceps. There's got to be more to your sense of satisfaction, your sense of moving forward. So, you know, I think my homework or like my homework, my like, my the thing that I would love you to take from this sort of weird reflection is that maybe you can get out a piece of paper or maybe you can just audio note yourself, like take an audio recording. Like, can you think of like five things or even three things in your life that are non-sporting, non-physical, where you can find a sense of progression? And it might be like reading books or like journaling however many days in a row or your garden or like there could be so many things. And I'm still like wanting to write this list. And I think that's what I want to do is like just compile a big list of all the possible things and then be realistic. Like, I quite like the idea of having a veggie patch, something I've always liked the idea of doing. In saying that, it's not really something I want to put time into right now. Like, that's just the truth. I'd rather do handstands and Duolingo. Like, that's more exciting to me. So like make this big list, but then be realistic about what you actually are interested in, because there's no point having something there if you're not interested. Okay, that is enough. There is way too much chat about all this philosophical woo-woo stuff. I think now we need to get into the nitty-gritty, the science. We're going to talk tendons. I'm going to talk about what is a tendon, why is it important for a runner, how do tendons adapt, and then what actually do we need to do to ensure that our tendons adapt in the absolute best way, okay? And this is specific to running, obviously. All right, so what's a tendon? It is simply a bit of connective tissue made up of collagen fibers that connects muscle to bone. And it is thick and it is strong and it is very important as a runner. It is also highly responsive to load. So it adapts positively or negatively depending on what it is given in terms of load. Now, as a runner, what are the most important tendons? Well, mostly it is the Achilles tendon, which connects the calf to the heel. And that does most of the work when we run. Other ones that are important as well are the patella tendon. So that's on your kneecap. You guys will feel that just where the kneecap is, just down, like just below the kneecap. There is the patella tendon. And then we also have our gluteal tendons on the side of our hip. They're also very important. And probably the last most important one for a runner would be the hamstring tendon. And all these lower limb tendons have important roles in running, slightly different roles, but they basically all help to store and release energy. So that essentially is what a tendon is designed to do: store energy, release energy. And it sort of acts like an elastic band. Imagine an elastic band being pulled back really tight, and then you let go and it flings forward. So having a structure in our body which is able to produce that much force and that much energy is pretty damn cool, because when you think about the effort of throwing an elastic band across the room, it'd be quite hard compared to if I were to pull it back and let it fling forward. That would be much easier. So similar principle applies with tendons in our lower limb. They can store and release energy and make it easier for us to run, make it more economical. So it makes our running economy improves. So therefore we use less oxygen and we find running easier because we're less breathless and we can then go faster, we can go further, we can go longer. So it is super important. And I think a lot of runners go wrong where they just get strong, but they don't get springy. So they get their tendons strong, but they don't teach their tendons to store and release energy like an elastic band, like they should. That's what tendons are designed for. And this is something that I actually look out for and observe when I do running biomechanics assessments. There's certain things that I can notice in running form, which might suggest that we're not using the elastic potential of, in particular, our Achilles tendon overly well, or potentially our gluteal tendons overly well. And these are things that we can optimize. And of course, sometimes it might lead to injury as well. So they're the main ones that are important for running, but we're going to sort of come back down to the Achilles, because as much as the gluteal and the hamstring and patella tendons work pretty hard, the Achilles tendon works the hardest. So we really can't do much without the Achilles tendon working, and hence why it's a very common running injury. But basically, the Achilles tendon does everything that the calf does, except it's got that added layer of springiness and elastic potential. But essentially, the calf and Achilles provide vertical support when we're running. So they help with that vertical force production, which means they help us get off the ground quicker. So we reduce our ground contact time, which is, as I said before, very good for our running economy. And having good running economy, as I said, just makes running a lot easier. So having a strong Achilles tendon is essential as a runner. And it's not even if you've had a previous Achilles injury, or if you've, felt it being sensitive or sore, or you've had whatever injuries anywhere. This is just important if you want to just find running more enjoyable, because obviously if we are able to use our body more efficiently, it's just going to be easier and more enjoyable. So I think everyone should care about this as a runner. So I've said before that tendons are adaptable and that they respond to load. What does that actually mean? So a tendon is very responsible for a lot in running, but it is very responsive to mechanical loading. So when we stress the tendon, it adapts. Now, it can adapt in positive or negative ways, but a positive adaptation would be when the tendon actually becomes more stiff, and then that is going to allow the tendon to work more efficiently like a spring. Now, when I say stiff, I think that word is a bit confused in sort of common everyday language. Like initially I used to think of the word stiff as like, I get out of bed and I'm like stiff and I'm achy and I did a long run the day before or a hard gym session and like, oh, my muscles are stiff and tight and my lower back is stiff and tight. That is stiff in like a negative sense. But when we're talking about tendons, stiffness is like a positive quality. So we actually want our lower limb to have a certain amount of stiffness. And if we think of a spectrum and on one end of the side, we have something like a tin man, like super stiff and rigid. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we have the opposite of that, which would be something really floppy. So I always think of spaghetti, like cooked spaghetti, that's very like, yeah, floppy and wobbly. Now, as a runner, we want our lower limb to be sitting more on the tin man side of the spectrum. We don't want to be a complete tin man because we want to have the springiness in our limbs, but we actually want to be pretty stiff in our tendons as opposed to really floppy like spaghetti. And to help you imagine that, just imagine if you were running on spaghetti legs. It would not be very efficient. You would be falling all over the place. You'd have very high ground contact time. So you're spending a lot of time on the ground and not much time in the air. And as a runner, we should be in the air. So that's a little bit of a visual to understand the concept of stiff and floppy. And we want to be a bit stiffer as a runner. So the tendons have this ability to become stiffer and positively adapt. And usually that tendon, it's not necessarily changing its structure in a physical sense. Like if you were to get an ultrasound, you're not necessarily going to actually see that the tendon is thicker, although that can happen. We can increase the cross-sectional area of a tendon, and that is considered positive, but we don't necessarily see that. We sometimes just find that the tendon is able to handle more, able to perform better. So functionally, it changes. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily change in its structural qualities. So we know that they're highly responsible. I keep saying they're highly responsible. They are highly responsible, but they're also highly responsive, in particular to mechanical loading. Now, we can have different types of mechanical loading. And the main thing that's going to drive the changes of the tendon is going to be three things. So we have tensile strain, we have compressive strain, and then we have shear stress or like shear forces. And then obviously we can have combinations of all those things. So a tensile stress is like when the tendon is getting stretched out. So imagine a calf stretch, when the Achilles tendon is getting really stretched. And so, you know, in the gait cycle, a runner would be exposing their tendon to the most tensile stress in the mid stance. So you've landed and then you're shifting your body weight over your foot and your leg is kind of in the middle of the body and your ankle goes into dorsiflexion, and that's when the Achilles tendon gets stretched out. So that's tensile stress. So just imagine that the tendon's getting lengthened. The other type of stress is compressive stress. And so that's kind of the opposite. It's when the tendon is getting compressed. This can also happen with footwear, as well as the very distal insertion of the tendon. So when the tendon is inserted on the bone, there can be compressive stresses of that tendon against the bone. And so this is where like different pathologies in the tendon and the location of that pathology is going to have a big impact of how we manage it, because a compressive stress injury to a tendon is different to that tensile stress. And obviously we can have combination. So that's the compressive stress. You can also have that with like footwear compressing on the back of your tendon. And another really common compressive stress to tendons is a proximal hamstring tendinopathy, which is something that I experienced last year. And the common thing for that is pain when you sit. And what happens when you sit is the proximal hamstring tendon. So that's where that's basically your butt, essentially. Think where that tendon inserts. It goes into your ischial tuberosity, which is the bony bit of your bottom. If you put your hand out in your butt, you'll feel like this bony part of your butt. That's the ischial tuberosity. And the tendon inserts there. And so when we sit, that tendon actually gets compressed against the bone. And that can cause stress to the tendon. Can be positive, can be negative, but it can cause irritation, particularly for someone who's got a proximal hamstring tendinopathy. But that can also happen when we're running up a hill, because we go into hip flexion. And so that tendon again gets compressed on the ischial tuberosity. So it isn't always going to be like some external thing pressing on the tendon, like your hand, your shoe, or, you know, the chair. It might actually be the position that you get in. So deep dorsiflexion, deep hip flexion, various different positions, like our knee, it could be really deep flex position. So certain sports that might get you into really deep knee flexion. Fortunately, running, you don't have heaps of that for the knee. Or for the patella tendon, I should say. And then the final stress is the shearing stress. And this is like stress that is going across the tendon. So it's going in the direction opposite to the way the tendon shortens and contracts. Contracts and lengthens. So imagine like someone drawing a horizontal line across the tendon, and the stress is like shearing across that. So this kind of stress is something that can happen if we have got excessive pronation or supination, or we might just go over a lot of wobbles and bumps on a trail. And just imagine that the ankle's moving a lot and we're not moving in that vertical plane. It's more going side to side or sort of horizontal. And obviously we can stress the tendons in a variety, a combination of all those things. Now, these different stresses are going to drive some changes. So they're all mechanical stimuli that will drive some kind of change in the tendon. Now, they don't necessarily have to be bad changes. They can be positive changes. Typically that shearing stress, not as positive, but the more tensile and compressive, and in particular, the tensile stress is actually the one that we're going to aim for in terms of positively adapting the tendon. So if we actually talk about what that would look like in terms of positive and negative, it's just really important to understand that with the tendons, we're trying to hit this Goldilocks principle because they're so responsive to load. They're going to respond if we take load away, and they're going to respond if we add load to them. And obviously as a runner, we're always, well, not always, but we're typically adding load to our system. And as a race comes up, we increase that training load. So we increase the load to our tendons and we ask the tendons to work a little bit harder. And if we get this imbalance of how much we load them and how much time they have to adapt to this load, things get a little bit out of kilter. So big part of this positive adaptation is about timing. So we know that a certain level of load or mechanical stimulus is actually going to maintain this level of homeostasis in the tendon. So the tendon's basically going to stay exactly the same. And this is kind of like a sweet spot in a way for our tendons. Like if you run 5Ks every second day, every week, and you've done this for 10 years and you just continue to do this, you could probably assume that the tendon is sitting in this nice level of homeostasis. Like we don't have pain, the body's handling the load, we're responding well, we're feeling good. We're probably not going to be positively adapting the tendon and getting it used to any more because we're continuing to have the same load, but we're also not negatively adapting. Like we're not maladapting. We're not in pain, we're feeling good. There's no dramas. So that might be that homeostasis. But if we have a stimulus that's like less than that and we don't have as much mechanical load, we actually have like a maladaptive response. So our tendon starts to decondition. And so, you know, we might lose some cross-sectional area, but we mostly will probably just lose functional capacity of that tendon. And conversely, on the other side of that, if we have large amounts of strain for that tendon, maybe we have lots of shearing forces or lots of compressive forces or just an excessive amount of tensile force, we are going to have issues as well. And so we don't want those negative adaptations. And what this might look like is some inflammatory markers. The body sends more fluid down into that area. We start to get a painful, achy tendon that, you know, maybe is just sore the next day after our run. And then it might progress to being sore at the start of our run, that might be sore for even longer periods, and then it might be really hard just to walk around separate to running. So that they're the kind of symptoms that we might expect with like a tendinopathy pain pattern. And, you know, this isn't very good because if we start to have our tendon becoming maladaptive, the tendon is actually just going to get weaker and reduce its ability to act like a spring, and it's now just not going to work for us when we run. So getting this Goldilocks tendon loading is super important. And unfortunately, running doesn't actually do heaps to improve our tendon capacity. There's an element of running that provides some level of conditioning for the tendon in the sense that if you've done a lot of running over your life and you're used to running, your tendon is somewhat adapted and sitting in this nice homeostasis place for running. Yet if we want to actually really increase the elasticity of the tendon, increase its stiffness, and increase its ability to act like a spring, then we are going to have to add some resistance, some really good mechanical loading. And what this usually looks like is resistance training, and in particular, something like a calf raise. It's basically the best way and probably one of the only exercises really that we can use to adapt the Achilles tendon, because very simply we are taking the tendon and we're putting some tensile load on it, and by doing that we're giving it a stimuli which can positively adapt the tendon. But as you guys know, that Goldilocks principle is super important. So something that I see a lot of people run into as an issue and a bit of a mistake with their tendon management is we have a painful tendon, we remove the painful stimuli, which would be running, we have a month off, and then we go back to running, And the tendon feels good for the first couple runs, and then it just blows up and gets the worst it's ever been. So then we have 2 months off running, and then we go back. A couple runs in, feeling okay, and then suddenly it gets even worse again. And I see this all the time, like patient after patient after patient with, you know, it may not be the Achilles tendon. Often it's the gluteal tendon, not often the patellar tendon. Sometimes it's the peroneal, sometimes it's the hamstring. And it's really frustrating for these runners. And they say to me all the time, it's so frustrating. Like, I've rested it so much, and I just think something now must be seriously wrong because I rested it so much, but it just keeps coming back. And I don't know what to do because I can't rest anymore. And every time I come back, it's like, I used to be able to do 15Ks and now I can only do 8Ks. And now just last week, I can only get through 2Ks. So this is a very classic case of a tendinopathy that is maladaptive, and it's just going down this negative spiral. And it's really important for us to break free from that cycle. And the way that we do that is optimizing our load, because we know that a tendon is sensitive to load. So it's sensitive to if we increase our load, and it's sensitive to decreasing our load. So sitting in the Goldilocks zone is imperative. We cannot progress a tendon. We cannot get out of pain. We cannot improve the way the tendon works, its functional capacity, its ability to act like a spring, if we don't sit in the Goldilocks zone. The challenging thing is that Goldilocks zone is going to move, because you're a human, your capacity to handle whatever the load is going to change. And also, if we're positively adapting, that Goldilocks zone is going to start to move to bigger and better and harder things. So you might only be able to handle 2Ks of running, and then it'll be 8Ks, and then it'll be 20, and then it'll be a marathon. And before you know it, you'll be running 100Ks every single day. No, probably not. But basically, we're looking to see that we're moving in that right direction. So increasing training load from running perspective, and also increasing the tensile stress that we're applying to the tendon with our resistance training, which is the calf raise, which we're about to speak about. So I guess that's a bit of a summary of like what the tendon is, how it adapts, how we get into these negative pain cycles. And then now we're going to talk about what we actually do. So we know that a mistake would be to have 2 months off training. And the reason why that's a mistake is because our tendon is now going to negatively adapt. So the tendon is going to decondition. It's like when you have a couple months off running and you lose that cardiovascular fitness, you go back and you're way more puffed than you used to be. So it's the same for the tendon. The tendon doesn't just have time off and get better. Like, a tendon is not going to get any stronger by just sitting around at home not running. The tendon actually needs to be loaded. So it's really important for us to maintain as much running as we can within reason. Now, there's some researchers that talk about 3 out of 10 being the max pain and a very acceptable amount of pain to run in or run through with a tendinopathy. And I totally back that. Like, I give that guidance to my patients every day, and I find it works really well. So if we have a tendinopathy, it is totally fine to run with a little bit of pain, as long as that pain warms up and as long as the pain stays within a 1, 2, or 3 out of 10 consistently. So we get a little bit of pain at the start of the run, it warms up, next day a little bit of pain, but it's not any worse than it was the day before. So a little bit of symptoms is okay, but we want those symptoms to be steady and stable. Compared to if we, every time we do our long run, the tendon is way worse the next day, and then we kind of have to recover over the whole week before we get back to our long run again on the Sunday. That's a sign that you're not really handling the load that you're giving your tendon, and you're probably sitting in that maladaptive zone. So what we need to do is try and pull our volume back just a touch so we can shift the needle and slide right back into that Goldilocks zone. Once we're in the Goldilocks zone, we're going to be hopefully sitting in that homeostasis. Now the tendon's stable. Now the tendon's settled, okay? We're not getting better yet, but we're stable. We're in homeostasis. That is a great place to sit in with your training load when it comes to running, walking. Running, walking, because that's what we're talking about. I say walking because sometimes we have an injury that is a running injury, but you might be someone who walks to work, or you catch public transport and there's extra walking to and from the bus or to and from the train, or your job just involves a lot of walking. So for those kind of patients and those kind of people, if you're a listener and that's you, it's just important to consider that, because that might be walking that you can reduce, or maybe you can't reduce. And so then you have to reduce your running. So just being really aware of the fact that anytime we're walking or running, we're loading that Achilles tendon. So, you know, again, I keep bringing it back to that Achilles tendon just because it's a really simple to understand example. And it's also a very common runner's injury. So it's going to be applicable to pretty much every runner. Or, well, you know, if you haven't had a tendinopathy there, then amazing. I actually have never had an Achilles tendinopathy. Oh, actually, that's not true. I did have the start of one once when I was coming back from my stress fracture many years ago. It was like teeny tiny bit of soreness. And I just like did my calf raises and, well, I didn't even really have to put my load back much at all. I just ran slower because that's another variable that you can play around with is speed and heels. Because we know that the Achilles and calf complex works a lot harder when we go up a hill and a lot harder when we run faster. So that's just a little bit about the other variables that we can play with. So let's say we've managed to slide into this lovely Goldilocks zone. We're sitting in homeostasis. The Achilles tendon is still symptomatic. We're feeling a 2 out of 10 every day after our long run, and then it warms up and it feels really good. And that's fine. That's cool. We're sitting in homeostasis. We know that we can handle 50 Ks of running a week. And so we're just going to try and sit there. And as long as our symptoms are stable, we're good. Okay. But now how do we get those symptoms to go away? We definitely don't pull back from running. Like, it's really important not to do that. And I feel like there's so much advice that often is like, rest your body, take time off, listen to your body. Like, you know, don't run if things are sore. And I often hear runners have this narrative of like almost feeling guilty, like, oh, I probably shouldn't have run through the pain, but I did. And a lot of the time, like, it's just so not true. And I actually get quite frustrated that people are getting told to rest more when that's literally pushing them back into that maladaptive zone. And so many times patients leave the clinic or like they're on their way out and they're like, oh, I'm just so glad that I can still run. And I'm like, yeah, like, of course you can. And they're like, oh, I just thought you were going to say that I was going to have to stop. And honestly, I just about never tell people to stop running unless they have bone stress or like a really irritated bursa or peritendinitis. But usually it's just tweaking the volume because we really want to try and keep runners running. And I know when I was a kid and I heard people talk about, you know, more active physiotherapy styles and like, yeah, we always keep our athletes moving because we know how important it is to them. I used to think it was about the mental health and about, you know, allowing an athlete to do their sport and kind of at consequence potentially of their overall best physical health and like sustainability. But now I look at it and I'm like, oh my goodness, no, like it's not even about that. It's like, it is because the body is designed to move and the body is designed to be stressed and the body is forever adaptable. And if we stop doing stuff, we have these negative adaptations and we decondition and then it causes more pain and more issues and all these other things to pop up. So we really must keep on keeping on as much as we can within reason, taking the advice from a professional, modifying things. This does not give you license to just push through pain. This is about being smart, being realistic, taking appropriate action, modifying your training. It's going to be annoying because you're going to have to pay attention to what was my pain? Like, how far did I run? You might have to have a training diary. Hopefully you use Strava and you can just use Strava because that makes it a lot easier. But it's just about being really aware and paying attention. And if it's too much effort and work and you're not too sure, like, well, I mean, none of those things necessary, but like see a professional, like get someone to actually look at your Achilles and actually be like, yes, it is a tendinopathy because it could be a peritendinitis and that's a totally different management. So like get something checked first, know what it is, know what you're dealing with, and then you can, you know, move on. And I'm hoping this episode is going to stop you from getting into that tendinopathy state because you're going to know the principles, or it's going to give you a bit of peace of mind. If you have a little bit of symptoms, you can be like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to this. I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to go and do my calf raises and then we're going to see if we can get better. And if not, then I'm going to go and get some advice. So guys, let's move on to what is the protocol for managing a tendon. Now, there is really good research on tendons. It's very well researched and it's very exciting because it means that we know what to do. There are lots of injuries that we actually don't have much certainty around. For example, lower back pain, it's multifaceted, it's complex, there's input from all different parts of our body, from our brain, there's lots of factors. Tendons, Not so much. They're pretty simple. So that's what I love about tendons, is that they're very simple. And the research tells us that slow, heavy resistance is the way to go. So what that means is we do not rush our calf raises. Now, if you don't know what a calf raise is, please pause this episode, jump onto YouTube and put in there calf raise, and even better, put in it, single leg calf raise. That is what I'm talking about. Super simple. I always get you to hold onto something for balance and then hold onto a weight on your other side, and we do the calf raise. Now, if you do calf raises while brushing your teeth, amazing. I'm going to give you a gold star. I love the enthusiasm. If you are really wanting to improve the capacity of your tendons and you've been doing calf raises while you're brushing your teeth for, I'm going to say, over 3 months, you are most likely ready to upgrade that and move on to a weighted calf raise. I love that you are ticking the box of something is better than nothing, because it is. Something is better than nothing. Unfortunately, though, tendons only know heavy tensile strain, and they've got to be mechanically strained in that tensile way. So stretching out under load. And if they don't get that heavy strain, they just simply won't adapt. And Rich Willey says, who is a researcher, and he has some fantastic research, which I am going to link. Oh, actually, am I going to link his research? No, I'm going to link someone else's research. But I went to a seminar of Rich Willey's, and what he said in the seminar was tendons get bored. And it was just such a great quote. And I'm starting to doubt if maybe it was someone else who said that. So I'm going to put all the resources in the show notes. But what is important to know is that is just that tendons get bored. So if you don't continue to stress them with harder, heavier weights, they're going to get bored and they're not going to get any better. They're not going to get any stronger. But another way to understand that tendons get bored thing is think about their attention span only lasting around 6 to 8 reps. So when you do a calf raise, you come all the way up, all the way down. That's one. All the way up, all the way down. That's two. After 6 to 8 reps, they start getting bored. They start to not listen. This is similar to bones as well, by the way. Once we get over 12 reps, they're really tuning out. It's like naughty kids in the classroom. They're really not interested anymore. And then over 15 reps, they're just like totally gone. Like they've left the classroom. They're like, nope, we don't care. So with regard to improving the tendon capacity, making it stronger, we've got to keep them engaged, and we've only got those 6 to 8 reps to keep them engaged. After that, we're not doing much. So if you're able to do a single leg calf raise and you can get over 12 to 15 reps, you're not really getting much benefit in terms of tendon capacity. So it's really important that we start loading up those calf raises with a weight. Now, the research tells us that a very slow calf raise is best, so even up to 12 seconds. Some of the research compared 3-second calf raises to 12-second calf raises, and the 3-second calf raises had comparatively, the 12 seconds were doing way better. So the Achilles tendon got thicker and it got more stiff, and it was able to perform better. So a really slow calf raise is important. Now, 12 seconds might be a little bit much, and I definitely don't do 12-second calf raises, but I probably would aim for like 3 seconds up, 3 seconds down. A nice 6-second calf raise is pretty great sweet spot. And you can even do a little pause sort of halfway along and then just really take your time into that bottom range. So really slow is important. Really heavy is important. Now, when I say heavy, you're wanting to be picking a weight that you're holding on to that means that the 6 to 8 reps starts to get really hard. And by the time you finish that 8th rep, in your head, you're thinking, gosh, I'm so glad we're stopping. I reckon I could have only done 1 or 2 more, and then I would have just totally failed the rep because it's that heavy that I just would not have been able to lift my heel off the ground any further. So that's a really good way to know. And people in the fitness industry or like strength industry would call it strength industry. You guys know what I'm saying. They would call that reps till failure. So I would say, or reps in reserve. I would call it like 1 to 2 reps in reserve. And that's about the sweet spot. Most of the time we tend to have a bias to go a little bit lighter. So really, guys, lift the heavy weight. It's pretty hard to hurt yourself on a heavy calf raise. Like things like squats and deadlifts and lunges, like, you know, you can hurt yourself. They're a little bit more awkward, a bit more wobbly, require more muscles working and more technique. But a calf raise, if you're going slow, it's actually pretty hard to hurt yourself. I've never heard of anyone tearing a muscle doing a calf raise. You're much more likely to tear it stepping off the gutter or not being warmed up, playing touch footy, something like that. In a calf raise, you're pretty safe. So don't be afraid to load it up. And going super heavy on your calf raise is really going to be the best protective thing that you can do to bulletproof you for running. If our calves and Achilles tendon is so strong, it's just going to mean that the rest of the body doesn't even have to work as hard to perform as a runner. It's going to improve our running economy. It's going to reduce the workload for the other muscles in the body. So guys, if you take nothing else from this episode, just think heavy, slow calf raises, okay? The research tells us, or the research that has the best outcomes looks at doing them 4 times a week. So that's like, you know, every second-ish day or a little bit more. And we want to have at least 12 weeks to have much positive adaptation. Some research looks at 14 weeks. So it isn't going to be overnight. And I say to anyone who's got a tendinopathy that we really cannot expect this to get better for at least 3 months. And we're likely to have some improvement in symptoms, but we really need to think about the next 12 weeks as a commitment to the Achilles tendon or a commitment to the patella or gluteal tendon or whatever it is. And that's just to have some positive adaptation. You might have been in a maladaptive phase for years and years and years. And so if that's the case, you might have spiraled so far in the other direction that we might really want to be spending the whole year getting your tendon so super strong. And unfortunately, that's just the case. But the other side of that to look at is that doing a calf raise if you don't have an Achilles tendinopathy is just such a great and important thing. So if you have got one and you're like, oh God, I'm going to have to do this for 6 months, like you're going to have to do it for 6 months, but then you should also continue to do it for the rest of your life. Because if you want to have a happy, healthy tendon, then calf raises are for you. If you want to go on hikes or bushwalks, calf raises are for you. If you want to walk around on your feet, which you probably do, then calf raises are for you. So there's not really anyone who shouldn't be doing calf raises. They're also good for the muscles underneath our foot, so all our foot intrinsic muscles. They're good for plantar fasciopathy or plantar heel pain, as it's called, and literally just everything in our foot. So calf raises have got no real negatives. 4 times a week sounds like quite a lot. And yeah, it might be. I think if you have been doing calf raises for a really long time, like years and years, you can probably just do them 2 times a week or 3 times a week. Personally, I do them 2 to 3 times a week. I've done them 4 times a week for many years with a heavy weight. And I feel like at the minute, my calves could always be stronger, you know, but I feel like I can get away with doing them 2, maybe 3 times a week on a good week. And that's okay for me because I'm sort of sitting a bit more in maintenance. But if you've never been doing them, we haven't done them much, then the goal would be to get to 4 times a week. And I would probably start at like 1 a week or 2 a week and build up over maybe 4 to 6 weeks up to that 4 times a week frequency, just to give your body a little bit of time, because it's very likely that the first couple of times you do these calf raises, you're going to be sore the next day. So keep that in mind. Go gently at the start. You know, maybe don't go super heavy for the first couple of weeks and then start to build yourself up. So guys, that is how you do the calf raises. We want 3 to 4 sets of 6 to 8 reps, heavy, slow calf raises, starting at 2 a week, building up to 4 times a week. And you want to be doing this basically for the rest of your life, because it just means that you're going to have running feel a lot easier. You can improve your running economy and you're less likely to get a tendon injury. The next part of tendon management is something that deserves its own episode, but it is training that stretch and shortening cycle of the tendon and training that plyometric springy capacity of the tendon. And this is probably something that a lot of people miss out on. They tend to do the calf raises and then forget to train the springiness and the bounciness of them. And simply what that springiness is going to look like is jumping and hopping. And the principles of that are something that, as I said, I think deserves a more detailed episode. But something that I do in my routine is a pogo hop. And I'm going to put a video of a pogo hop in our show notes, so you can just click onto that video. And that video is by Mechanics of Movement, who posts some incredible, incredible Instagram posts, has a great blog, and I would just be trawling through all of that and soaking up all the good information because, yeah, there's just a lot of wisdom on that page and a lot of really practical advice for runners and strength training. So definitely check that out. But basically, a pogo hop is a really nice way to train the Achilles to act like a spring, because that really is part two of training the tendon. And unfortunately, running has a limited ability to train the tendon in that sense. Like, running basically is teaching us how to run, but the stuff that we need to do to actually get our tendon strong and able to handle the load and then to get the tendon springy is the stuff that you really need to do in the gym. And unfortunately, there's just not heaps that you can do by just doing body weight at home. Like, you definitely don't need to go to a gym. Like, you can get some weights at home or even a heavy backpack and put it on your back. But unfortunately, if you've been doing single leg calf raises for a couple months, the chances are that you can do over 10 calf raises and it's not that hard. So unfortunately, you are going to have to level up by getting some weights, getting a heavy backpack, or going to a gym, which is lots of fun. So summary is, guys, heavy, slow calf raises and some reflections on non-physical activities that you can do to get a sense of progression in your life. So that is the episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I'm very excited if you made it all the way to the end. Hopefully, I will see you at Sydney Marathon Run Club in the coming month. Or if not, you guys will hear me on the next episode. So next week, we actually have the winner of Sydney's Backyard Ultra coming on. And then we have Sophie after that. And then the week after that, we have a Olympian, which is very exciting. And then it'll be back to my solo episode again. And guys, I think we're going to be chatting finally about footwear, which I am preparing that episode at the minute. I just have not finished preparing it. So just you wait. That is coming. A guide to buying footwear, a guide to buying running shoes, which we've had a lot of questions come in about that. So stay tuned for that episode. But in the meantime, there is lots of fun, exciting things to come. I hope you are enjoying your day wherever you're listening. If you'd like to share a little snippet of what you're doing while you're listening and share it in your story, that would be wonderful. Or if you could review the show, that would mean a lot to Soph and I. Or if you just want to tell a friend about something that you learned in the podcast or something that came up that gave you an opportunity to reflect or even just question the way you do some things. And maybe you've just got some questions about Achilles tendon loading or about the ways that tendons adapt and what I meant when I said tendons get bored. And if so, you can send us an email, strongestride@gmail.com, or you can message us on Instagram @strongestride. And that is all, folks. I hope you have a wonderful Sunday and we'll see you on the next episode.